Greetings. Well, as we turn to the Word of God this morning, let's go ahead and stay in the flow of worship and let's pray. Living God, who is good and who really is the Lion and the Lamb, who is kind and merciful, we ask you for your mercies today as we turn to your Word. We acknowledge our deep need of you to give us guidance, to give us insight into your Word and how we can apply it to our lives. It's in your name that we do lift up this time, and we ask for your divine help. And we ask, Lord, that you'd help us to put this word into practice beyond our time together this morning. Help us to live this word for the sake of your glory, but also for the sake of for our own walks with Christ, and then also for the sake of our families and next generation. In the name of Jesus Christ, Lord, have your way. Amen. All right. Well, again, happy Father's Day. I love Father's Day. I'm a dad, so right, that's kind of a self-serving comment. You know, I love Father's Day. It's like saying, I love Christmas. It's like, yeah, because you get presents, huh? Right? So, no. But I really do love Father's Day. It is a cool holiday. And by the way, dads, we got something for you after church. So you get yourself, we got some corn dogs for you. Corn dogs and root beer. Now, that's a dad gift, okay? There's nothing that says, like, dad gift. They're like corn dogs and root beer. So we got you in the back. So you want that? Hey, you know, you're walking out of here. You're like, what am I going to do? We got you. Corn dogs and root beer. Hey, right? We got you. Okay. We got you. But in any event, happy Father's Day. And today we're gonna take a special time out in our time in the Word to talk about fathers in a very unique way. We're going to be in the book of Proverbs, as you can see. And we're going to be in Proverbs chapter 4. Right, as we talk about Father's Day, and we want to specifically talk about wisdom with a father's voice, we're going to be in Proverbs. And if you're turning to Proverbs, obviously you're in a section of the Bible called wisdom literature, right? And so that encompasses Proverbs, it encompasses Ecclesiastes, and then also Job, right? And those are all very different books, but they all belong to this kind of genre of literature called wisdom literature in the Bible. It is literature that's meant to make one wise. And each of those books is doing that in a different way. They're not all the same, right? But wisdom literature is simply, it is a means by which people are taught how to become wise. More specifically, they're taught how to make righteous judgments and how to see consequences, hopefully from far away, to like take a telescope and to see consequences way down the road and to avoid consequences for wrong action, right? But then also to take that same telescope and to see the wonderful results of right action down the road and to take that right action before you have to, right? Before you have to. So we don't always have the luxury of doing the right, of being able to telescope the right thing. Right. Sometimes you're caught unawares. It's a situation you didn't plan for. You're like, I got to figure out what to do. Right. And that happens to all of us. And that's just life. But there are many situations where you can plan for the right thing ahead of time through right action, through right practices, and through the implementation of right action and right practices. You're going to get a right heart before you have to face the time of decision. Right, whether it's a fork in the road that's going, that's taking you to the path of righteousness, or the fork in the road that's taking you to the path of destruction, you want to know ahead of time, if you can, which way to go. Proverbs is set up to set you up, right, to set you up for what they call the path of righteousness or the way of life, and to rescue us from the way of death, to set us up to be wise and to not be fools, right? So that's the way Proverbs goes. Proverbs is really interesting in that it's easy to just look at it like a bunch of disconnected sayings. Sometimes they are. You can read a chapter of Proverbs and you get like 27 different sayings, and there is very little connection between them, and that's fine, right? Sometimes it's set up that way. But the book is actually set up a certain way. It's structured a certain way, right, the entire book of Proverbs. And one of the bits of structure, in fact, is at the very top of Proverbs. When you read chapters 1 through 8, and if you're paying attention, what you see is chapters 1 through 8 function like letters from a father to a son. You'll see it pop up over and over again. We're going to see it in our passage today. You'll see it's letters from a father to a son, or letters from a father to his sons. They kind of switch back and forth between sons and son, right? And this is thought to have been this bit's thought to have been what Solomon, the wisdom that Solomon would be passing on to his son or his sons, right? That's the thinking there. But in any event, that's the setup for Proverbs. Then everything else that comes later is basically the wisdom part that he wants to impart to his sons. And one of the primary voices in Proverbs is wisdom is like a woman. Wisdom is called Lady Wisdom, right? And she's even personified, like she has a voice and she speaks in a certain way. And there's certain characteristics to the way she talks. You see Lady Wisdom, and wisdom is talked about as a woman overwhelmingly in the book of Proverbs. That is the personification, as if wisdom is a woman. But in this first section here, we have the voice of wisdom coming from a father. I thought that was appropriate to look at on Father's Day, is finding the voice of wisdom in the voice of a father, and looking at that. When you hear wisdom, when you hear people, especially people who are older than you, speak truth into your life, whether you want it or not, right? How have you typically responded? And don't think about now, right? I'd say go back to about 13 years old. That'll do it. 13 years old. I got a 13-year-old right now. As you can tell, this is like really, this is a pressing issue for me, right? What was it like when you heard wisdom from mom, from dad, aunts, uncles, right? From older cousins, great aunts, great uncles, grandparents? What was it like to hear that wisdom, right? You can even extend it out. Yeah, I had a sports coach. I had a basketball coach. I played basketball. I also played flag football. I had a flag football coach, you know. And what was that like to hear the voice of wisdom? How did you respond? Now, it all depends on what kind of person you were and where you were in life, right? Not all of us respond to the voice of wisdom the right way. And not only that, all of us at some point in time responded to the voice of wisdom the wrong way, right? You can't tell me. Who do you think you are? You know? What do you mean she's bad for me? I love her, right? What do you mean he's terrible for me? I love him, right? This is us, right? Everybody has had good, bad, and ugly responses to wisdom. Everybody. It all depends on what age and stage of life you were in, what was happening in your heart at the time, and who you were at that particular point. Good, bad, and ugly, all of us, right? We live with that. That's just called being a human being, okay? We've all had these different responses to wisdom. But what I want to do here is to persuade us to hear wisdom rightly, right? To make us understand that we should care about appeals to wisdom. We should care when people speak into our lives. And for this specific day, because it's Father's Day, I'm going to focus on dads. I'm just going to focus on dads specifically. It's not only about the dads, but on this particular day, I want us to focus on that and to say, like, how do we hear wisdom with the Father's voice? What's our response when we hear it? How do we hear it? And I want us to tune in to wisdom from a father's voice. Our culture is not very amenable to fatherhood right now, right? Not very amenable to fatherhood, not very amenable to family. In fact, I think our culture has waged war on those two things. There is a war going on, right? And it's intentional, right? So it's important for us to tune in and to say, now, wait a minute. How do I hear this? How can I hear wisdom when it has a father's voice? How can I hear that? How should I tune in to wisdom? And I think that Proverbs 4 helps us out. So notice, it's not just a matter of reading, of hearing the wisdom, and in particular in Proverbs, reading the Proverbs, especially in chapters 1 through 8, and saying, oh, okay, I understand that. They're usually very easy to understand when you read Proverbs. That's one of the cool things about Proverbs, right? I used to have a pastor who said, a proverb a day keeps the stupids away, right? And they're separated into 31 chapters. And so, like, you basically, hey, you got, like, one chapter a month, you're going to be set. And that's how he would read through Proverbs. Whatever else he was reading Scripture, that's what he'd do, right? And so it's great to be able to just to discern what's happening with the Proverbs, to figure them out. But then I want to deal today with how the voice that's being used, the Father's voice. How do we hear the Father's voice of wisdom? Right? How do we hear the Father's voice of wisdom? Right? And hopefully what that'll show us is number one, how to hear that. But then number two, especially for us dads, our granddads, right? And then some of us who we are fathers to kids who are not biologically ours, but in all other respects, they're ours. Right? How do we speak wisdom? How do we speak wisdom as fathers in varying capacities? How do we speak it and how do we hear it? Not just the bare facts of wisdom, but the voice it's coming from, right? Because who's saying it is every bit as important as the actual content itself. How do we hear this? And we're going to just go through Proverbs chapter 4 together and look at that. So I'm going to say that there's five ways. There's five ways that we ought to hear. You could argue five ways we ought to hear and speak the Father's wisdom, right? And here we go. So the first way is to hear a father's wisdom as one who blesses you. As one who blesses you, right? And I'm going to go through a few passages in Proverbs to show this. This is verses 1 through 2 in Proverbs 4. This is what the father says. He says, "Listen, my sons, to a father's instruction. Pay attention and gain understanding. I give you sound learning, so do not forsake my teaching." Verses 10 through 11, "Listen, my son, accept what I say, and the years of your life will be many. I instruct you in the way of wisdom and lead you along straight paths." Verses, skip down to verses 20 through 22. "My son, pay attention to what I say. Turn your ear to my words. Do not let them out of your sight. Keep them within your heart." It's easy to hear that and to say, wow, this dad is quite confident about the power and the efficacy of his words. Look at how he describes the content of what he's saying. It almost sounds like arrogance, you know. Pay attention. I gain understanding. Right? I give you sound learning. Right? If you accept what I say, the years of your life will be many. Now, that's a bold statement, right? Especially because you consider, I mean, many of us will or have outlived our parents. That makes, you know, there's a sense to that, right? That many people do outlive their parents. That makes sense. You know, I hope my kids outlive me, right? And so you don't even get to see, like, all the years of the life of your child, but that you're saying, if you listen to me, your years will be many. In other words, foolishness will not cut your life short, right? "I instruct you in the way of wisdom, lead you along straight paths. Don't let my words out of your sight, keep them within your heart." Now that can sound like arrogance. Why in the world is this dad so sure that his words are that awesome, right? But it's not arrogance. It's not arrogance, right? This is the voice of a father who wants to bless, his child, bless his children, right? He thinks he's got the good stuff, like treasure, like some of the best things in life, and he wants to pass them on. And a kid could say, really? Like, how do you know that your words are like this? How do you know that, dad? Granddad, great uncle, right? Older cousin, football coach, you know, just general friend who's older than me who knows stuff. How do you know that? How do you know that? How do you know that you can bless me in that way? Well, probably through experience, right? If someone has managed to not just to grow old, but along the way to also grow up, that means that what they're going to tell you is going to be the voice of some good experience, right? They've seen wisdom play out in the best ways, they've seen foolishness play out in the worst ways, and they've made some mistakes and recovered, and they got something to tell you. And maybe they don't just want to rule your life or destroy your life. Perhaps they just want to bless you and they want to say, hey, benefit from my successes and please don't replicate my failures. Let me bless you, right? This father's voice is the voice of blessing, right? And so when we as dads, granddads, friends, as we pass on wisdom to those who are coming up, future generations, just to other people, right? We want to make sure that we are blessing. We're in the blessing mode, not just in the do what I say mode. That's not a good mode. If kids always know that mode where it's just, could you just do what I say? Why? Because I said so, right? They know what that is. But the blessing mode of, now you need to do what I say because, like, I'm going to save you from some nonsense. I'm going to save you from being a knucklehead, right? I'm going to save you from being a knucklehead. My mom was really good at this. My mom was amazing. Single mom, so a lot of you know my story. I did not grow up with a dad. My mom was very good at this, though. She was amazing. She was really, really good. She would, like, when it came time for, like, sex ed, right, like, all these people have all these weird, complicated calculus formulas in school, mostly because they're trying to teach you some bizarre things in schools about sex ed and everything. My mom's sex ed course was really easy. It was simple because I grew up in the hood, right? And my mom's sex ed course was like, okay, see these kids over here who are all older than you and been in jail, right? And got all kind of bizarro family situations and some weirdo stuff happening in life, right? Okay, so here's how that happened. Don't do that. That was it. I mean, I was scared straight. I was one of those kids, man. Like that was it. That's all she did. She didn't. It wasn't complex. Now you could argue, like with every parent, hey, there's ways my mom could have beefed up over here, beefed up over there. You know, ways. I was older. I was like, man, it would have been really cool to know this or that. Okay, but that's just being a parent. You don't cover everything, right? You're not an encyclopedia. Okay. That's fine. Every parent has shortcomings when you're passing on wisdom. But man, it was hyper effective. Let me tell you in my life. Where she would just point out, she said, don't do that. You see that right there? Let me explain that to you. Let me tell you how that happened. Myron, don't do that. That was it. Right? Now, why was she doing that? To bless me. Because she saw the future. And she saw the present. And she wanted to bless me. That's how I took it. I was deeply frightened. Right, I'm not going to say I looked at it and said, "Wow, this is amazing wisdom from my mother." I was just like, "Huh!" Ah! Right? No, don't. Let's not do that. You know, scared straight. Hey, you can't argue with results. It worked. All right. She wanted to bless me, and she the way she spoke to me, she spoke to me in such a way I was able to hear her the voice of blessing. Now, let me be clear: there are plenty of knucklehead moments in my life where I did not hear my mother's voice as the voice of blessing and wisdom, and I was like, "I'm gonna do it my way." And then after I crashed and burned, I was like, "Hey, let's try your way the second time." Yeah, that's good. That's all of us. But we should hear the voice of the Father's wisdom as a voice of blessing. We should speak it that way as those who influence people in a fatherly way. Right, and we should also hear it that way when there are people, good people who didn't just grow old, but on the way to growing old, they grew up. When we hear those people, we should hear it that way. Someone who wants to bless us. One who wants to bless us. Next, we should hear fatherly wisdom, right, as a solid source of information. A solid source of information. But just camp out on just a few verses, just a few verses here at the top of Proverbs 4. It's Proverbs 3 through 5. Listen to this. This is really cool, and it's easy to skip over this when you're reading Proverbs. It says this, "For I too was a son to my father, still tender and cherished by my mother. Then he taught me and said to me, 'Take hold of my words with all your heart. Keep my commands and you will live. Get wisdom, get understanding. Do not forget my words or turn away from them.'" Right? a solid source of information. Now, how am I getting at that? Well, look what he does here. He does this cool thing, and it really lasts from about verses 3 through 9, where basically this father who's speaking to his son, he takes a stroll down memory lane, right? And he said, you know, he says that thing that many kids bristle at when they hear it. Back in my day, right? Back in my day, you know, when the dinosaurs roamed the earth, back in my day, I was like you. I was a son with a dad. I was a child with a dad. And he says, still tender and cherished by my mother. That's meant to give you the sense of I was still young. I was a whelp. I was a sprout, right? And he taught me and said to me, take hold of my words with all your heart. Keep my commands and you will live. Get wisdom, get understanding. Don't forget my words or turn away from them. And that what he's quoting from his father, therefore his son's grandfather, it extends all the way through verse 9, right? Now, why would he go back and do that? What's the purpose of that? Why say that? I mean, he could have left that bit out. He could have just quoted his dad and just left all that out. He didn't have to say, oh, yeah, you know, this is what my dad told me. He could have just basically stolen it. Why does he say that? He's trying to establish authority and say, look, this didn't just come from me. I didn't just make some stuff up, right? I didn't just make some stuff up. Let me tell you, when you become a parent, a lot of you know this already, and when you're a parent, this weird thing hits you. Like, I remember when Alyssa and I, we had our oldest, Coraline, and, you know, we had the baby, and it was all cool and everything. You know, you spend so much time learning, you know, just how you're going to have this kid, and how's everybody going to be safe, and you do all the obstetrics and everything, and we had midwives as well and all that kind of stuff. And then, like, something funny happens. They give you the baby, and they let you go home. And that sounds goofy because you're like, okay, what else would they do? But no, it hits you as a parent like, oh, come on, the baby's mine. That's it. Like, you look at him and you're like, are you sure you want to give me this baby? Because I'm not sure. I'm not quite so sure I'm up for this because you've been prepping. It's been 9 months. You've been prepping. And you were just like thinking, hey, I just want to get the baby into the world alive, right? But suddenly they give you a child, they're like, bye-bye. Oh, you're like, can somebody just come for like, you know, 3 months and just coach me and make sure that, like, you know, I'm doing things right? Can you help me out? Because I don't know if I'm quite the adult just yet. I thought I was, and then you gave me the baby to take home. I don't know anymore. Because you feel the weight. It's on you. Now, technically, if you have a community around you, it's not just you. You know, the old African proverb, it takes a village to raise a child. There's truth to this. So if you have church community, you have extended family, it's not just on you. But man, it's primarily on you. And you feel the weight. That's why there's a lot of people who themselves, they may not be Christian, they may not know Jesus, they may not have received Jesus' sacrifice on the cross for their sins, they may not believe in the resurrected Lord, but you know what's funny is, they will have kids, and guess what they'll do? They send their kids to religious school. It took me a while to figure this out. I watched this happen for years. And I was like, why? I was like, I know you. You a stone cold skeptic. I've debated with you before. What you sending your kid to Christian school for? Right? I mean, I'm cool with it, but explain it. And it took me a while to realize that. I was like, oh, I get it now. So you had that baby, and they gave you the baby, and you realized all the moral training was on you. And you went, uh-oh. Because you know you. And you know you're not enough. So you send them to a religious school, and you're like, look, I don't know if I believe all that miracles and Jesus dying for the sins of the world and all that stuff, but man, I need a higher authority for the morals. That's what this guy's doing here. He's saying, I got this from your granddaddy. I didn't just magic some nonsense up. It comes from your granddad. And my assumption is that granddad, and if this is Solomon, he'd be talking about David. David didn't just grow old. David grew up. He grew up on his way to growing old. And that's the kind of people you want to speak into your life. Warts and all, we know David's story. It's written in Scripture, right? There's nonsense in David's life. There's nonsense that scarred his life. There's nonsense that not only scarred his life, but actually scarred his family. If you read 2 Samuel, that thing with Bathsheba kept going. And he lost two sons because of that. No, he lost three sons, sorry. He lost three kids because of that stuff, and it went for a long time, for years afterwards. Yes. But at the same time, he also practiced righteousness. Right? He's weird. He's a conundrum, like all of us. Right? And as he grew old, he grew up. And so here's this father saying, look, I got this from somewhere. I got this from somewhere. It's not just coming from me. It's coming from a solid source, and I passed it on to you. Right? We should speak fatherly wisdom into people's lives and tell people, show people the machinery. This didn't just come from me. It comes from God's word. It comes from this person. It comes from my grandmother, my mom. Right? I didn't just make some things up. This is based upon people lived this out and it worked. Or people lived out the opposite and it was a train wreck. Don't be the train wreck. Stay on the tracks. See? We should speak wisdom as if we are referring to a solid source. And then also we should hear it that way too. Especially from people who did not just grow old, but they grew up along the way. Next, or third, we should hear fatherly wisdom from as if it's somebody who wants our success, who wants our success. Check out verses 6-9. Now here, he's still quoting from what his dad told him, right? So we've got a few generations going on here. He's quoting from granddad, all right, 6-9. Do not forsake wisdom and she will protect you. Love her and she will watch over you. The beginning of wisdom is this. Get wisdom. Though it costs all you have, get understanding. Cherish her, and she will exalt you. Embrace her, she will honor you. She will give you a garland to grace your head and present you with a glorious crown. Right? It's interesting. Now, the father does this interesting thing because there's been this pervasive tone of obey my words. My words lead to life. These are my words. If you do it, here's your awesome outcomes, right? But also, he speaks about wisdom as if wisdom has a life of its own. He even personifies wisdom. Wisdom is her, right? She will give you a garland to grace your head in verse 9. She will present you with a glorious crown. It's as if wisdom has a life of its own, right? And getting wisdom will lead to success, right? Getting wisdom will lead to success. And so therefore, do anything you can to get her, right? Get wisdom, get understanding. Don't forsake it. It'll protect you. Love it or love her. She will watch over you, right? Sacrifice everything you got to get it. And what will the end result be? Verses 8-9. Cherish her, she will exalt you. Embrace her, she will honor you. She will give you a garland to grace your head and present you with a glorious crown. This is the voice of a dad who wants the best for his kid, right? And his dad wanted the same for him. He's quoting his dad and now passing on that exact same quotation to the next generation, right? I want the best for you. Right? Not do what I say because it'll make me look good. Not do what I say because it'll make me successful. No. And sometimes it's what we think. We can hear it that way. You know, mom and dad say something like that. They lay some wisdom on you. You're like, no, 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 no. No, this is about you. Right? This is about you. And sometimes that can be true. Sometimes we can mess up like that, and really we're passing on wisdom, and it's like not really our kid's best at heart. It's really about what's good for us. Sometimes it happens. It does. We're human, right? But there's other times where it's not true. We're passing on wisdom because we are the biggest cheerleaders for the success of our kids, our grandkids, right? And sometimes it could be the younger generation can hear it the wrong way. You're not looking out for me, you're looking out for you. It's like, no, I promise you, I'm really looking out for you. I promise you, I'm really looking out for you, right? In this sense, this dad is the biggest cheerleader for the kid. Now, that's a weird thing to think about a dad as a cheerleader, but I went to a school where, like, the cheering squad was cool, and it was like, yeah, obviously, we had young ladies in the cheering squad, but we also had guys, and the guys were buff, right? They actually, it gave me a lot of respect for dudes cheerleading, right? It gave me tons of respect. I was like, whoa, look at these dudes. I mean, you get to hang out with all the ladies, and you kind of buff. Man, I need to rethink this, right? I think about in the NBA, Charles Barkley, who was one of my favorite players in the 80s and then into the early 90s. He's a Hall of Famer, and he played with the Philadelphia 76ers, and he was a phenom. I mean, he was a beast, and he was just a phenomenal player. And he had a lot of antics with Charles Barkley, lots of antics. Some of them just funny, some of them uh-oh moments. But in one of them, I remember this, like he was going up to dunk, I believe, basketball. He did it successfully. It was a really amazing play, spectacular play. And he fell down after the dunk, and he fell straight into the cheering section, right? Now, in professional sports, these are all women, right, who are the cheering squad. It's not like high school where you get, like, guys and you get women. No, you get, like, all women in professional sports. So he falls straight into the cheering section. Everybody was okay, right? So you know what he did? He picked up some pom-poms, and he just started doing this, you know, like straight right into the camera. It was hilarious. See a guy, like, you know, 6'4", 6'5", you know, really pretty burly, sit up and just pick up pom-poms and start cheering, you know, impromptu cheering squad. It's really hilarious. That's what's happening here. Right, this is an intergenerational cheering section. Right, the father's saying, "I want your success," and my dad was the same with me. That's the imagery here. The imagery here in verses 8-9: being exalted, being honored by wisdom, having a garland on your head, and being presented with a glorious crown. The image there is of a festive occasion. Just in any kind of festive occasion, and they would give you some of your translations might say a wreath, right? And it was just meant to mark a festive occasion. This father wants his child to be ready for success, to be ready for that occasion. When the occasion comes, when it's time for festivity, when it's time to be honored, make sure you got a crown. Make sure you got a crown. And what is that? A wise life. Right? A life characterized by not forsaking wisdom, by selling out and doing anything you can to get wisdom, and you're going to get a crown for your head. And when it's time to be celebrated, when it's time to be exalted, you will be ready. Right? You will be ready. When it's that time of life to step up to the plate and to do the honorable thing, you'll be ready because you will have already lived according to wisdom. You will have sold out everything you can to get wisdom. You'll be ready. This father wants the son to be ready and wants the best for the son. It's the voice of wisdom. It's the voice that wants the child's success. It's also, though, number four, it's a voice that teaches true delight. The fatherly voice of wisdom teaches true delight. True delight. Pick this up in verse 12. It says this: when you walk, your steps will not be hampered. When you run, you will not stumble. Hold on to instruction and don't let it go. Guard it well, for it is your life. Do not set foot on the path of the wicked or walk in the way of evildoers. Avoid it. Do not travel on it. Turn from it and go your own way. For they cannot rest until they do evil. They are robbed of sleep till they make someone stumble. They eat the bread of wickedness and drink the wine of violence. Now hang out right there, right? So he switches his metaphors. He's talking about a path. You see this all throughout Proverbs. The path of wisdom, the path of the righteous, the path of life, right? Just the course of your life. Just basically all it's meant to say is, look, doing life is like, it's like a path, right? I feel like it was that old song, Life is a highway. I want to drive it all night long. Okay, I've dated myself. But in any event, it's got the same kind of vibe, right? Life is a highway. Life is a path. Choose wisely. Choose the right path. There's a path of righteousness. There's also a path of foolishness. And here, he switches to this metaphor, and then he presents a contrast, right? There's the way of wisdom. It's a straight path. Hold on to it. Don't let it go. But then he talks about the path of the wicked, right? Verse 14. Don't walk in that path. He says, avoid it. Don't travel on it. Turn from it. Go your own way. Wow. In a very short span of time, he's found all kinds of creative ways to say, don't do it. Don't do it. But then he gives the rationale. Because one thing to just say, don't. Look, don't do that. But then he gives this rationale. And listen to the imagery here. 16, they can't rest until they do evil. They're robbed of sleep till they make someone stumble. They eat the bread of wickedness and drink the wine of violence. Now, what are all these things? You know what these are? These are perverted pleasures. Think about it. You can't rest and you're robbed of sleep. When do you rest? When do you get sleep? Well, after you've had a long day. Maybe you were productive. You had a great productive day. And, you know, that's usually how rest is talked about a lot in the Old Testament. Rest is, and think about Sabbath, right? You had a long week, and God says, hey, take a load off. Rest. Enjoy me. Enjoy my creation. Rest, right? It's a good thing. Rest is good. Sleep is good. But wait a minute. They can't rest until they do evil. They are robbed of sleep till they make someone stumble. What that's meant to say is their version of a hard day's work is evil. They can't be content and just go and rest and lay their head down the pillow and say, wow, I've had a hard day today. I really deserve this 8 hours sleep. You do that, and you just say, you know, I went to work. That was awesome. Or maybe you helped some people out, or maybe you helped some family members out, and you're like, whew, that was tough, man. I really want to take a load off. These folks don't say that. You know what they say? Oh, I can't sleep until I've done evil. Right? False satisfaction. False contentment. Delighting in evil. Can't rest until they've done it. They eat the bread of wickedness, the wine of violence. What is that? Right? What is that? Bread and wine are celebratory. Think about communion. That's what we do, right? We got bread, we got grape juice. Some people actually do real wine, right? It's celebratory. You have bread and wine, especially in this culture. That's the good stuff. You got bread, you got wine. Hey, you're winning. You're winning, right? This is the bread of wickedness, the wine of violence. These are false delights, false pleasures. Enjoying bread and wine because there's been wickedness, celebrating wickedness, right? Not content to lay their head on the pillow unless they've done evil. Not content to celebrate with bread and wine unless they've committed violence and wickedness. Now, this is interesting because it's like, well, man, it's one thing to just say, look, follow the path of righteousness. I promise you, it's going to lead you in an awesome place. But then you got to go up against things like bread and wine, false delights. False delights, because evil's not automatically apparent. If it was so, we wouldn't do it. I mean, how many things have you done in your life? How many things have I done in my life where at the time it was amazing? It was the coolest thing ever. I celebrated my freedom. It took me 5 seconds to think of it. It took me 5 minutes to do it. It took me 5 years to pay for it. That's sin. That's how it works. The problem is the front end. It seems so delightful, and that's what he's trying to get across. I know it seems delightful. I know contentment and satisfaction from evil is delightful. I know that the bread and wine of wickedness is really delightful, but don't do it. And here's how he counters. Look at this, verses 18 through 19. The path of the righteous, he comes back now to the path of the righteous. He's presenting a contrast. Is like the morning sun shining ever brighter until the full light of day, but the way of the wicked is like deep darkness. They don't know what makes them stumble. Now watch that. That image is really important. The path of the righteous is like the morning sun. And look at what he says. Shining ever brighter until the full light of day. Basically, it starts, you know, at dawn, and then ultimately goes to noonday. Now, that takes time, doesn't it? I mean, whatever. I don't know right now what sunrise is, but let's just say it's about 5:45. Sadly, my children are very much in tune with this, but with their sleeping cycles and their wake-up cycles. But let's say it's about 5:45, right? It's still pretty dark, right? And then let some time pass. And then what? It's going to be a little lighter, about 8 a.m. Let some time pass. It's going to be full brightness at noon. Yes, even in the Pacific Northwest, it's still full brightness at noon. We just, our weather has issues. But there we are, right? It takes time. And what he's saying here is, look, righteousness takes time. It's not always immediately discernible when you're looking at it at 5:45 a.m. The good is not always immediately discernible. Let it bake. Give it time. Noonday's coming. Whereas bread and wine, oh, that's immediate. Bread and wine are immediate. Satisfaction? Laying your head in a pillow after a hard day's evil is readily discernible immediately. See that? Delight has this bit to it that can be, delight in evil can be immediately gratifying. That's part of why we like it so much and why we are attracted to it. It can be immediately gratifying, and then we pay on the back end. Righteousness is not always immediately gratifying. It can be, but not always. Not always. Evil almost always is. Evil almost always is. And what he's saying is, look, you need to let righteousness bake. Don't throw in with people who just give you immediate gratification. Right? You need to let these things bake. You need to wait. And you stay on the right road. And don't be distracted with bread and wine, false delights. This is teaching true delight, right? Delayed gratification, delayed delight. True delights are always, in some sense, delayed. But the benefits package is amazing. Because on the back end, it's always awesome. It's always awesome because it's awesome before God in the light of eternity. Lastly, The fatherly voice is one that develops character. It's all about the character development, the development of the inner person, character development. Not just a bunch of rules, but actually worried about, concerned with who you're going to be down the stretch. Verse 20, my son, pay attention to what I say. Turn your ear to my words. Do not let them out of your sight. Keep them within your heart, for they are life to those who find them and health to one's whole body. Above all else, guard your heart. For everything you do flows from it. Keep your mouth free of perversity. Keep corrupt talk from your lips. Let your eyes look straight ahead. Fix your gaze directly before you. Give careful thought to the paths of your feet and be steadfast in all your ways. Do not turn to the right or left. Keep your foot from evil. See that? Look at the imagery. Look what happens there. He switches metaphors now. He was focused on wisdom a lot and his sayings and his words. And now he gets towards the heart. Verse 21, keep them, his words, within your heart. They will be, verse 22, health to your whole body. Verse 23, guard your heart. Verse 24, keep your mouth free from perversity. Corrupt talk from your lips. Verse 25, your eyes, keep them straight, looking straight ahead. Fix your gaze. It's also your eyes directly before you. Give careful thoughts to the path of your feet. Right? Verse 27, keep your foot from evil. Look at that body imagery. It's all body imagery. Why? Why? Because now he's telling his kid, hey, I can only take you so far. You're responsible for who you're going to become. Take control of you. Wisdom is meant to give us the capacity to take control of ourselves. We can't always control our circumstances, but my goodness, we can control us. Or we should be able to. If we put wisdom into practice consistently enough, we should be able to control us. Myron should be able to control Myron. Over time, a greater degree of control over myself, self-mastery, because of putting into practice the wisdom from God. Right? Self-control. Self-control. Right? It's interesting that it's very easy to hear wisdom as if people want to control us. Now, for terrible, dangerous people, that's true, they do. But for people who not only grow old, but also grew up, that's not true. What people want us to do, good people, righteous people, people who have God's, the things of God in mind, and who have our best in mind, who look out for our success, what they want us to do, actually, interestingly enough, when it comes to control, is actually they want to give us control over ourselves. It's one of the best gifts we can give our children, our grandchildren, anybody to whom we have that kind of relationship where we're speaking into their lives, is we can teach them self-control. How do you control you? In a world where a great number of forces are quite interested in controlling many different aspects of your life, we've seen a lot of that the last few years, it is really good to be able to master self-control. And that only comes about through putting wisdom into practice over time consistently. There will be all kinds of screw-ups. I have had them. But consistently put into practice, we are given self-control. Right? Self-control. And I get it. It's a tough sell to talk about the fatherly voice of wisdom being amazing in a culture that militates against fatherhood, right, and men in general, right? And it's true, that is the case. In a culture that militates against family and it seeks to rub it out, that is the case. I stick by that. It's a tough case to make, but it's a case that needs to be made, right? It's a case that needs to be made. We need the voice of wisdom in a certain key, in a certain note. Right. Not only that note, moms, I ain't putting you down. Remember, you're talking to a kid of a single parent, and I love my mom, right? Still rocking a good relationship with her and everything. That's cool. So please don't hear me. This is denigrating moms or anything like that. No, I have no interest in that. That's a no-go for me. But when it comes to hearing the fatherly voice, hear it. Those who are fathers, grandfathers, you know, or who simply have a fatherly role in somebody's life, embrace this, right? This is who you're called to be, right? You're called to give wisdom in this way, to bless, right? To seek out the success of those whose lives you speak into, to seek out their best, to develop their character. You're called to this. To those who had these people in your life, hear this. Tune in, hear it this way. Listen to people who didn't just grow old, but who also grew up along the way. You need these voices because there are all kinds of other voices out there that vie for your attention and do not have your best interest at heart. And the living God speaks through the voices of those who not only grew old, but also grew up and are growing up. So take full advantage of their presence in your lives. Amen? Praise the living God. All right, we are going to worship the living God and go out of here in a song of praise. And I'm going to switch mics because if not, you're going to get all...